7. Share House. Leave a house empty in Malibu, Tessa told Chevette, and you get the kind of people come down from the hills and barbecue dogs in your fireplace. Hard to get rid of those kind of people, and locks wouldn't keep them out. That was why the people who used to live here before the spill were willing to rent them out to students. Tessa was Australian, a media sciences student at USC, and the reason Chevette was out here now, couching it. Well, that and the fact that she, Chevette, didn't have a job or any money, now she'd split with Carson. Tessa said Carson was a piece of work. And look where it had all gotten her, Chevette thought, pumping her way up the trainer's illusion of a Swiss mountain road, and trying to ignore the reek of moldy laundry from the other side of the drywall partition. Someone had left a wet load in the machine, probably last Tuesday before the fire, and now it was rotting in there. Which was too bad, because that made it hard to get into riding the trainer. You could configure it for a dozen different bikes, and as many terrains, and Chevette liked this one, an old-fashioned steel-frame 10-speed you could take up this mountain road, wild flowers blurring in your peripheral vision. Her other favorite was a balloon-tired cruiser you rode along a beach, which was good for Malibu because you couldn't ride along the beach, not unless you wanted to climb over rusty razor wire and ignore the biohazard warnings every 100 feet. But that gymsock mildew reek kept catching in the back of her sinuses, nothing alpine meadow about it at all, telling her she was broke and out of work and staying in a share house in Malibu. The house was right on the beach, with the wire about 30 feet out from the deck. Nobody knew exactly what it was that had spilled, because the government wasn't telling. Something off a freighter, some people said, and some said it was a bulk lifter that had come down in a storm. The government was using nanobots to clean it up, though. Everybody agreed on that, and that was why they said you shouldn't walk out there. Chevette had found the trainer her second day here, and she'd ride 2 or 3 times a day, or, like now, late at night. Nobody else seemed to be interested in it, or ever to come into this little room off the garage next to the laundry room, and that was fine with her. Living on the bridge, she'd been used to people being around, but everybody had always had something to do up there. The share house was full of USC Media Sciences students, and they got on her nerves. They sat around accessing media all day and talking about it, and nothing ever seemed to get done. She felt sweat run between the headband of the interface visor and her forehead, then down the side of her nose. She was getting a good burn on now. She could feel groups of muscles working in her back, ones that didn't usually get it. The trainer did a better job on the bike's chartreuse lacquer than on the shift levers, she noticed. They were sort of cartoony, with road surface blurring past beneath them in generic texture map. The clouds would be generic, too, if she looked up, just basic fractal stuff. She was definitely not too happy with being here, or with her life in general at this point. She'd been talking with Tessa about that after dinner. Well, arguing about it. Tessa wanted to make this documentary. Chevette knew what a documentary was, because Carson had worked for a channel, Real One, that only just ran those, and Chevette had had to watch about 1,000 of them. As a result, she thought she now knew a whole lot about nothing in particular, and nothing in particular about whatever it was she was actually supposed to know. Like what to do now that her life had gotten her to this place. Tessa wanted to take her back up to San Francisco, but Chevette had mixed feelings. The documentary Tessa wanted to make was about interstitial communities, and Tessa said Chevette had lived in one because Chevette had lived on the bridge. Interstitial meant in-between things, and Chevette figured that that made a kind of sense anyway. And she did miss it up there, miss the people, but she didn't like thinking about it, because of how things had gone since she'd come down here, and because she hadn't kept in touch. Just pump, she told herself, cresting the illusion of a rise. Shift again, pump harder. The road surface started to look glassy in places because she was overtaking the simulator's refresh rate.
Zoom in,
Tessa's voice in miniature. Shit, Chevette said, flipping up the visor. The camera platform, like a helium-filled cushion of silver mylar, at eye level in the open doorway. Kid's toy, with little caged propellers, controlled from Tessa's bedroom. Ring of light reflected in the lens housing as it extruded, zooming. The propellers blurred to gray, brought it forward through the door, stopped, blurred to gray again, reversing, rocked there till it steadied on the ballast of the underslung camera. God's little toy, Tessa called her silver balloon. Disembodied eye. She sent it on slow cruises through the house, mining for image fragments. Everyone who lived there was constantly taping everyone else, except Ian, and Ian wore a motion capture suit, even slept in it, and was recording every move he ever made. The trainer, performance machine that it was, sensed Chevette's loss of focus and sighed, slowing, complex hydraulics beginning to deconfigure. The narrow wedge of seat between her thighs widened, spreading to support her butt in beach bike mode. The handlebars unfolded, upward, raising her hands. She kept on pedaling, but the trainer was winding her down now. Sorry, Tessa's voice from the tiny speaker. But Chevette knew she wasn't. Me too, Chevette said, as the pedals made a final arc locking for dismount. She swung the bars up and stepped down, batting at the platform, spoiling Tessa's shot.
Une petite problemette. Concerns you, I think.
What?
Come into the kitchen and I'll show you.
Tessa reversed one set of props, turning the platform on its axis. Then two forward, and it sailed back through the doorway into the garage. Chevette followed it, pulling a towel from a nail driven into the door jamb, closing the door behind her. Should have had it closed when she was riding, but she'd forgotten. God's little toy couldn't open doors. The towel needed washing, a little stiff, but it didn't smell bad. She used it to wipe sweat from her pits and chest. She overtook the balloon, ducked under it, entered the kitchen. Sensed roaches scurrying for cover. Every flat surface except the floor was solid with unwashed dishes, empties, pieces of recording equipment. They'd had a party the day before the fire, and nobody had cleaned up yet. No light here now but a couple of telltales and the methodical flicker as the security system flipped from one external night vision camera to the next. 4:32 a.m. showing in the corner of the screen. They kept maybe half the security shut down because people were in and out all day, and there was always someone there. Whir of the platform as Tessa brought it up behind her.
What is it? Chevette asked.
Watch the driveway.
Chevette moved closer to the screen. The deck slung out over the sand. The space between the house and the next one. The driveway, with Carson's car sitting there.
Shit,
Chevette said, as the Lexus was replaced with the between-houses view on the other side, then a view from a camera under the deck.
Been there since 3:24.
The deck.
How'd he find me?
Between-houses.
Web search, probably. Image matching. Someone was uploading pictures from the patty. You were in some of them.
The Lexus in the driveway. Nobody in it.
Where is he?
Between the houses.
Under the deck.
No idea,
Tessa said.
Where are you?
Deck again. Watch this, and you start to see things that aren't there. She looked down at the mess on the counter and saw a foot-long butcher knife lying in what was left of a chocolate cake, the blade clotted with darkness.
Upstairs,
Tessa said.
Best you come up.
Chevette felt suddenly cold in her bike shorts and T-shirt. Shivered. Left the kitchen for the living room. Pre-dawn gray through walls of glass. English Ian stretched, snoring lightly, on a long leather couch, a red LED on his motion capture suit winking over his sternum. The lower half of Ian's face never seemed to be in focus to Chevette. Teeth uneven, different colors, like he was lightly pixelated.
Mad, Tessa said,
and never changed the suit he slept in now, kept it laced corset tight. Muttered in his sleep, turning his back to her as she passed. She stood with her face a few inches from the glass, feeling the chill that radiated from it. Nothing on the deck but a ghostly white chair, empty beer cans.
Where was he?
The stair to the second floor was a spiral, wedge-shaped sections of very thick wood spun out from an iron shaft. She took that now, the carbon fiber pedal clips set into the soles of her shoes, clicking with each step. Tessa waited at the top, slim blonde shadow bulked in a puffy coat Chevette knew was burnt orange in daylight.
The van's packed near the door, she said. Let's go.
Where?
Up the coast. My grad came through. I was talking to Mum, telling her that, when the boyfriend arrived.
Maybe he just wants to talk, Shivet said. She'd told Tessa about him hitting her that time. Now she half regretted it.
I don't think that's a chance you want to take. We're away, right? See, I'm packed.
Bumping her hip against the bulging rectangle of a gear bag slung from her shoulder.
I'm not, Shivet said. You never unpack, remember?
Which was true.
We'll go out over the deck, go round past Barbara's, get in the van, we're gone.
No, Shivet said. Let's wake everybody up, turn on the outside lights.
What can he do? I don't know what he can do, but he can always come back. He knows you're here now. You can't stay.
I don't know for sure he'd try to hurt me, Tessa.
Want to be with him?
No.
Did you invite him here?
No.
Want to see him?
Hesitation.
No. Then get your bag.
Tessa pushed past, leading with the gear bag.
Now, she said, over her shoulder, descending.
Shivet opened her mouth to say something, then closed it. Turned, felt her way along the corridor, to the door to her room. A closet, this had been, though bigger inside than some houses on the bridge. A frosted dome came on in the ceiling when you opened the door. Someone had cut a thick slab of foam so that it fit the floor down half the length of the narrow windowless space between an elaborate shoe rack of some pale tropical hardwood and a baseboard of the same stuff. Shivet had never seen anything made of wood that was put together that well. The whole house was like that, under the share house dirt, and she'd wondered who'd lived in it before and how they felt about having to leave. Whoever it was, to judge by the rack, had had more shoes than Shivet had owned in her life. Her knapsack sat at the end of the narrow foam bed, like Tessa had said, still packed. Open, though, the mesh bag with her toilet stuff and makeup beside it. Skinner's old biker jacket hung above it, shoulders set broad and confident on a fancy wooden hanger. Black once, its horsehide had gone mostly gray with wear and time. Older than she was, he'd said. A pair of new black jeans were draped over the rod beside it. She pulled these down and worked her feet out of the riding shoes, got the jeans on over her shorts, a black sweatshirt from the open mouth of the knapsack, smell of clean cotton as she pulled it over her head. She'd washed everything at Carson's when she'd decided she was leaving. She crouched at the foot of the foam, lacing up lug-soled high tops, no socks, stood and took Skinner's jacket from the hanger. It was heavy, as if it retained the weight of horses. She felt safer in it, remembering how she'd always ridden with it in San Francisco in spite of the weight, like armor.
Come on,
Tessa calling softly from the living room. Tessa had come over to Carson's with another girl, South African, the day they'd first met, to interview him about his work at Real One. Something had clicked. Shivet smiling back at the skinny blonde whose features were all a little too big for her face, who looked great anyway and laughed and was so smart. Too smart, Shivet thought, stuffing the mesh bag into the knapsack, because now she was on her way to San Francisco with her, and she wasn't sure that was such a good idea.
Come on!
Bent to stuff the mesh bag into the knapsack, buckle it, put that over her shoulder, saw the riding shoes. No time now. Stepped out and closed the closet door. Found Tessa in the living room, making sure the alarms on the sliding glass doors were deactivated. Ian grunted, thrashing out at something in a dream. Tessa tugged one of the doors open, just wide enough to get out, its frame scraping in the corroded track. Shivet felt cold sea air. Tessa stepped out, reached back through to pull her gear bag out. Shivet stepped through, knapsack rattling against the frame. Something brushed her hair, Tessa reaching out to capture God's little toy there. She handed the inflated platform to Shivet, who took it by one of the propeller cages. It felt weightless and awkward and too easy to break. Then she and Tessa both grabbed the door handle one-handed, and together they pulled it shut against the friction of the track. She straightened, turned, looked out at the lightning gray that was all she could see of the ocean now, past the black coils of razor wire, and felt a kind of vertigo, as though for just a second she stood at the very edge of the turning world. She'd felt that before on the bridge,
up on the roof of Skinner's place, high up over everything. Just standing there in a fog that socketed the bay, throwing every sound back at you from a new and different distance. Tessa took the four steps down to the beach, and Chevette heard the sand squeak under her shoes. It was that quiet. She shivered. Tessa crouched, checking under the deck. Where was he? And they never saw him. Not there, and not then, as they trudged through the sand, past old Barbara's deck, where the wide windows were all blanked with quilted foil and sun-faded cardboard. Barbara was an owner from before the spill, and not often seen. Tessa had tried to cultivate her, wanted her in her documentary, an interstitial community of one, become a hermit in her house, holed up amid share houses. Chevette wondered if Barbara was watching them go, past her house and around between it and the next, back to where Tessa's van waited, almost cubical, its paintwork scoured with wind-blown sand. All this more dreamlike somehow with each step she took. And now Tessa was unlocking the van, after checking through the window with a flashlight to see he wasn't waiting there. And when Chevette climbed up the passenger side and settled in the creaking seat, blanket laced over ripped plastic with bungee cord, she knew that she was going. Somewhere. And that was okay with her.